It is Locked On Jazz for the 12th of September. Eric Woodyard stops by to talk about the Jazz in our summer interview series. SIs drop their top 100, and five Jazz players are going to show up. What does that mean? And they're all rated pretty well. We'll talk about it coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky little numbers on the Jazz. You can get this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or tell your smart speaker to play Locked On Jazz. By the way, I just found out if you're a League Pass subscriber, you can get your smart speaker, at least Alexa, to play Jazz play-by-play in the house. I'll try to give you more details as the season gets closer and make sure we understand that for you, but cool little thing. How are you? Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Chevy, Mazuma USA, as well as the store. All right, let's I want to dig into the SI Top 100. We don't have Rudy, as I'm recording this, we don't have Rudy out yet. We'll have that in the next few days. But three of our Jazz players fell before 50. Ricky Rubio at 57, Joe Ingles at 56, and then Derek Favors came in at 51. We'll get to Donovan. Here's what I think's interesting about this. If you just take the top 100, and if you were to equally distribute the top 100 amongst 30 teams, it'd mean that you have about 3.3 players on every team in the top 100. We're going to have five. So our entire starting five is going to make the list. And we're going to have five in the top 57. And if you were to take that and divide it by three, then obviously, divide it by 30, because there's 30 teams, right? You're going to end up with less than two. So we're going to have five in the top 57, where if you equally distribute the average, you'd get two. It's a pretty good tribute to how, you know, that this team's pretty good. I think the world of Ben Golliver and I think the world of Rob Mahoney. So the guys who did this, I think, are really, really bright, thoughtful basketball people. And I thought they treated the guys maybe even overly fairly, frankly. I think they're right. But I'm not sure that everybody would have Ricky Rubio at 57 ahead of Lou Williams 61 or ahead of Jeff Teague's 58. I would. When Ricky Rubio got basically traded for Jeff Teague by Minnesota, I thought that made them less good. Okay, so I would agree with that. And I thought what they wrote about Rubio was interesting, that here you've got a guy who's already one of the best passers, one of the best defenders, one of the best rebounders, who's now become an average shooter. Right, he's a career best effective field goal percentage 3 years in a row. If you go look at his numbers on cleaning the glass and the percentile where he fits for his position, he is basically an average player shooter. Okay, well, that's a big step for him. That's a considerable change to where you would have had him prior as a player. Because he was thought of as one of the worst shooters in the league. And if he gets back to going to the free throw line, as he did a few years ago, then he becomes actually outwardly efficient, which I think is, you know, and at 28 years old, you should expect some of that uptick. Leadership, other things, I think they took that into advantage, or into consideration. So when you look at Ricky, his effective field goal percentage percentile-wise as a player, over the years of his career, 13th percentile, 12th percentile, 20th, 6th, 10th, 17th, and last year, 55th percentile, three-point shooter at his position. And that changes who he is as a player. I thought SI picked that up. Maybe a little short. I have a hard time with that, but really well. Joe Ingles, you know, one of the elite shooters in the game, passes the ball, turns it over a decent amount. Good defender, we know that. A lot of people don't. you know, to have Jamal Murray, who's averaging 17 points a game, right, and 4 rebounds and 3 assists, right next to him, I think is a tribute to kind of how much SI took in the value of who Joe Ingles is. Eric Bledsoe averages 18 points a game. They have him in the same ballpark as a player. And then Favors at 51 is really interesting. Derek's still very interesting. I had a nice conversation with him yesterday that we'll have for you coming up in a week or so. He seems like he's in a great place. He looks good. He's weighing about 250. So he's down a little bit from where he has been. He says he's really not worrying about his weight. It fluctuates so much meal to meal that he's tried to stay away from. He actually just sounds like a guy who's done a great job of getting rid of the noise around him, which is pretty cool. You know, they talked about in this that Favors and Gobert have been successful together. Favors talked to me yesterday about how he thinks he's got the quickness to be able to handle the 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", power forwards and then try to take advantage of them. And the fact that it gives the Jazz all sorts of different defensive options that they have. Favors at 51 when Devin Booker's averaging 25 points a game is 50 is a pretty nice little tribute. Eric Gordon, Robert Covington, bigs that they had in the area. I thought this was interesting. Dario Saric at 54. Favors at 51. Kristaps Porzingis at 52. Andre Drummond at 46. Drummond averages 15 points, 16 rebounds. Interesting. You know, I don't know who I actually, like on the Jazz, I'd certainly rather have Favors. If I was just starting a team, I don't know. Drummond is such a poor shooter outside 3 feet. It's hard to do a lot with him. We really get into a DeAndre Jordan at 43. I'm not totally convinced that DeAndre Jordan. I'm really curious to see what DeAndre Jordan does in Dallas. There were some defensive numbers for Jordan that made me wonder how big his overall defense and rim production really is. In the game. And Blake Griffin at 41, Blake Griffin's pretty good. And Marc Gasol at 40, I think it's a pretty fair assessment on those three guys. And then you get into some pretty high-level guys, and you get to Donovan at 34. Donovan was remarkable last year. Donovan's comps are amazing. Donovan's commitment to everything about being a teammate just comes out talking to these guys all the time, how great it is. And he has the ability to take over a game. So part of me feels like 34 is low. I mean, like CJ McCollum or Donovan, but then I start walking through like CJ. Like CJ's 21 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, probably a little bit more efficient than Donovan is at this point. His career has taken over games and dropped 50 kind of the same way Donovan has. Better pure shooter. Like, you know what? Fair. Kemba Walker at 32. Yeah, I could probably try to claim Donovan is better, but Kemba was 22 points, 3 rebounds, 6 assists. He's more efficient. He's probably a little better shooter. He carries the load on his team in a similar fashion. Like, all right, like, again, I just think a wonderfully done job by Ben Golliver and Rob Mahoney with a lot of effort. And I don't find a bunch of guys I can jump out and say, you know, I actually think Donovan is placed perfectly. And when we see today who the next list of guys who comes out are, the next step for Donovan is he going to be more than CJ McCollum? Is he going to be more than Kemba Walker? Like, that's the question on Donovan. Is he going to be more than Damian Lillard, who's going to be ranked ahead of him? But we're into the top 30 players in the NBA. This is some rarefied air for a rookie. Ben Simmons has not been rated yet. I think they have. So they have Simmons ahead of Donovan. That'll drive you crazy. Tatum's at 39. And the next tier of players are all the players we're wondering whether Donovan's going to be better than. Eric Woodyard coming up. Deseret News summer interview series continues. Today's show brought to you by Murdoch Chevy. Find new roads at Murdoch Chevy, located in both Woods Cross and in Logan. I am currently driving the Equinox, which is part of their SUV lineup. I think when we think of Chevy, we feel so comfortable with their truck lineup. It's one of a kind, unequaled, from the Colorado that I drove recently to the beautiful Silverado. Then you think about their high-level SUVs, the Suburban and the Tahoe. That's when you think of Chevy. Take the next level and check out the Traverse. Check out the Equinox, and you'll be really impressed. The Traverse has the third row seats. The Equinox does not. Those are the next two tiers on their SUV. I'm driving the Equinox, crazy quiet. That's been a signature of every Chevy I've driven so far. And then when you also all the bells and whistles, the safety features along the way. The Traverse has some neat things where the rearview mirror changes to the backup camera and other items in case you have something on the back. Some other items along with that. It's got all the bells and whistles. And the Equinox has this really quick turbo engine that they've put into it, that when I'm heading up the canyon and need a little juice, I've been awfully impressed. In fact, used it the other day where it was a slow car, had to head out a lane, and was able to hit it, and boom, that 1.5 turbo double cam motor gave me that 170 horsepower they're talking about. Check it out, Murdoch Chevy. Every time you're dealing with Murdoch, you're dealing with 92-plus years in business in Utah, and you're dealing, of course, with the good people like Tyson at Murdoch Chevy, giving you the car washes for life, the as well as your safety inspections for life and the price match guarantee. Get new roads, Murdoch Chevy, out in Woods Cross as well as in Logan. Today's show is also brought to you by Mazooma USA. If you're a small business owner and you're not using Mazooma, frankly, you're losing money right now and time. When you're building a business, the last thing you want to be doing is dealing with all your bookkeeping, right? You've got visions. You got things you got to do. We're building the Lockdown Podcast Network. I wish I could use Mazooma. Well, here's what you get. For an introductory rate of $75 a month, you get your own bookkeeper and your own CPA. They are assigned to you. They're not switching. You're not dealing with a different person. You meet with Mazooma. You get the early consultation with Mazooma. And then the next step on the way is they hook into your systems, and immediately they're giving you reports every month. When it's all done, you get taxes taken care of for you. No contract, cancel anytime, no hidden fees. Every month you get a report. Every quarter you get a tax planning call. And the end of the year, for $75 a month, you're getting your own CPA and your own bookkeeper. It's an incredible deal. Check it out at MazoomaUSA.com or tell them Locked is your promo code that you got it from us, or call 801-980-2102 for a free consultation. That's 801-980-2102. That's 801-980-2102 for a free consultation. Summer interview series continues today. Eric Woodyard, Deseret News writer. If you didn't hear our last show of last week, we actually just talked Eric's kind of life story. It's interesting. It's impressive. Makes you want to root for him when you're reading him. So you got another guy to root for in this process. But let's talk some basketball. When you evaluated the Jazz at the end of the season, how good did you think they were when it all ended in Houston?
Man, I think they were far beyond what anybody could have imagined, man. I mean, those guys were playing some phenomenal basketball. You know, I think they were clicking at the right time. I think Houston was just flat out more talented, man. I mean, it didn't go down as far as the Jazz, you know, as far as energy, effort. I think they brought it. But it was just a way more talented team. I mean, you know, Houston pushed Golden State to seven games, and possibly could have won the series had Chris Paul played. So I thought the Jazz played as good as they possibly could have played, man, and superseded anybody's expectations last year.
Were you surprised, or did it make sense to you that they brought the whole group back?
It made sense. I wasn't surprised at all. I would have been surprised had they went out and done something crazy, like trying to bring another big name in or something like that. I thought they should keep that core together at least, you know, one or two more years and see how it works. They're getting chemistry. You have a young star in Donovan Mitchell, and he loves his teammates. You don't want to, you know, I was just reading a story today. They was talking to Greg Kelser and talking about, you know, how when the Pistons traded him away and how high Isaiah Thomas took it. So you don't want your star player, you want to keep things familiar with him, especially going into a second year, because emotionally, you know, that can play a big factor on the basketball court as well. So I think keeping that team intact, what they were able to accomplish, I think they'll do big things this year.
There's always this fun. Everyone always says the right things, right? Sometimes they actually mean the right things. Sometimes the right things are true. Sometimes they're not. What was your vibe last year on the chemistry of this team? Did you think that whole story of them being family and together was real?
Yeah, I thought it was for real, man. I thought, you know, it was really on display this summer, man. I think, you know, it caught me by, not surprised, but just being at summer league and seeing seven guys sitting courtside for a summer league game. I mean, who does that? I'm not just saying that because I'm here. You know, I'm seeing these guys. I've never seen a team this connected, you know, as far as being together. And, you know, I'm used to the social media stuff, but they were actually together working out, watching games, you know, actually enjoying each other's company. And it's legit, man. I mean, seeing these guys, I feel like it is legit. I feel like it's a strong bond that's for real.
You know, I my listeners have heard about this a lot. I read the book Culture Code this summer by Daniel Coyle, and actually I'm sitting down with all the players and doing interviews on the focus of the culture of this team right now. And we'll air those coming up on Locked On Jazz. And one of the things it says is that when you're in a culture that's good, it's addictive. Coyle talked about how when he went and visited all these places, he'd always end up canceling his first flight out to stay an extra day or two. Because when you're in this kind of positive, this culture where you feel safe, you're vulnerable, but you're able to be successful, that you are in turn, you want to be there more. Is that what you think, why this all happened?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've never heard that before, but that is a great analogy. I mean, that's what anything. If you're seeing positive results and you're feeling good and you know just feeling that sort of energy, I think you want to stick in that. I mean, it is addictive. You know, success is addictive as well. So, yes, I definitely believe that. I believe this team is experiencing that, and I feel like they all feel like, you know, something special is brewing with this team. And you know, nationally, I think people are starting to catch on as well too. You're seeing all the different lists of where people rank the Jazz at. I think I've seen them highest too. You know, so I think they're starting to, you know, really make some noise nationally as well. And, yeah, I think that definitely is the case with this team.
Do you have any feeling? Obviously, I'm asking these questions to the guys right now to try to get the answer. So I will not share with you all the answers I'm getting. But do you have any feeling on why and what allowed this culture, if we buy it, and I do too, I think it's legit. We'll see if it can last. That's the challenge. But at this moment, do you have any feeling on why it came together like this? What the impetus was? What allowed it to happen?
I can't put it on one person or one thing, but, you know, from my understanding is, you know, when the top guy buys in and he's humble and no ego, which is Donovan Mitchell, I think it kind of just, it's infectious. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I think it's just passed down, I mean, from him. I mean, you know, like they had to really get together after they lost that game in Atlanta, you know, last year, and they finished the season so strong. They pulled out that overtime victory in Detroit. And I think from then, you know, they really bought into each other. But I think it really has started with Donovan. I think he's changed the culture here. And he's just a fun guy to be around. I mean, if anybody's ever, you know, been around him or interacted with him, it's legit. And I think when your star player, you know, has no ego and acts that way, it trickles down to the rest of the guys.
Elaborate. What jumped out to you about Donovan the person? The player was obvious. We can talk. We'll have fun talking about that in a minute. But what jumped out to you about him the person?
He was always the same. I mean, like, you know, win, lose, or draw. We might see him a little mad, but as far as, like, dealing with the media or dealing with people, I've never seen him be a jerk to anybody. You know what I mean? Like, you can approach him. He's very approachable. You know, he's pretty much the same always. I've probably only seen him mad, like, one game, you know, and that's even a stretch. His mad is not, like, super mad anyway. So I just think, you know, he's a great person, man. You can tell, like, you know, from me interacting with his mom and his dad and his, you know, his sister, you know, he just comes from great stock. It's been said over and over, but, you know, that guy is, like, legit. It's not just – I mean, he pulls up at 3-on-3 tournaments in the summertime. You know, he, you know, pulls up at barbecues, you know, on 4th of July just, like, randomly. So, I mean, that says a lot about his character. And I think it's everything people have been reading and saying is legit. You know, all my interactions with him have been positive. You knock on wood that can stay that way, you know. But I think I hope it. I hope it. I hope it. continues that. You know, I don't see it falling off, but I just hope it continues that way. You know, anything can happen, but he's a great person.
Do you remember in the midst of one of the win streak stretches, we're interviewing him. This was at home. And he starts talking about Naz Long, and it couldn't have been George Niang because they both weren't on the same team at the same time. But he's talking about Naz Long and Eric McCree and the guys on the end of the bench and how they were so important in the win streak. That to me was like the moment where I was like, what is going on here? Like, here's this guy who's in a rookie of the year battle. Everything's about him. He's leading Sports Center. The world's going nuts about him. And he's talking to us as our rookie about he wasn't even talking about the 14th and 15th guy. He was like on the two-way guys.
I've seen him talk about the people who make smoothies.
Bernie. I don't know if you remember that one. Shouted out Bernie.
Yeah, he's talking about the people who make smoothies in the back and all type. I mean, so, yeah, that's you don't see that a lot, you know. And that's the other reason I'm so excited, just like, you know, an egoless team. You know, I'm like, it just makes our job that much more easier, and it makes going to work enjoyable.
One of the most interesting things about Donovan, and we'll talk about this coming up with Eric, I want his point of view on this, is where his mom made him go to school before he went to Brewster Academy. That was Greenwich Country Day School, which is really the number one per capita income city in America. This is, as Donovan said it himself, this is going to school with Forbes 500 kids. Now, the question how many people know what Forbes 500 is, they're rookies in the NBA, is a question itself. And I want to get Eric's perspective on what that has done for Donovan. We come back with more on Locked On Jazz. More with Eric coming up. If you're a football fan, Crossover Wednesday across the Locked On Podcast Network is fabulous. It's the matchups and the two hosts going back and forth. So go find your favorite NFL team or the team you care about most or the big game you're going to be watching this weekend and go to Locked On That Team and listen to Crossover Wednesday. Also, brand new fantasy football show. Vinny Iyer's hosting it with the biggest experts every week. So you can get a different expert and a different point of view every single week on Locked On Fantasy Football. More with Eric coming up. As I said, today show brought to you by The Store. That's right, 6200 South and 20th East. I want to talk to you about the Mudslide Cookie. There's a lot more to The Store as well. There's the great local feel that you get when you walk in there and all the various things that they bring to your with the local companies. There's the June pies. They had a little intro on June the other day in their email. It's fun to hear about this woman out of Hebrew suddenly create this pie. But that's what they do. I mean, it goes back to the story about them going to the I think it was Scotty was at a wedding, and or maybe it was Jeff was at the wedding, and they're great tortilla chips, so he hunts around, finds out who makes the chips, tells the woman, if you make these chips, I'll put them up in the store. And that's exactly who these great people are. And that's what the store is all about. Check it out, 60 North South, 20th East. When you walk into the right-hand side, you will see all the cookies and the things. There's the kombucha on tap, the cold brew on tap. And then if you head over to the back left corner, they've got the foods for you for the day if you want your lunch. Back left corner is the produce, and you'll get that. And then there's the whole local area right over there as well. Check out the Mudslide Cookie. You need one every single day. It's The Store, 600 South, 20th East. So, Eric, we told your story growing up in Flint, Michigan. Maybe you have a different perspective on this, and that's why I wanted to ask you. I walked back from in Charlotte with Donovan from the arena back to the hotel after shoot around one day, and I said to him, you know, what is that impact of that Greenwich Country Day? And he said, well, what's interesting is that two things were interesting, he said to me. One was, you know, I'm back in touch with a lot of those guys, and it's nice because I know they don't need anything. So I thought that was interesting.
Right.
And two, he said, you know, I used to go to dinner at these guys' houses, and their dads were on the Forbes 500 list, which is the 500 wealthiest people in America. Mm-hmm. And I'm, like, looking at their house like, all right, I got to get this. Like he tangibly, it wasn't like it was on television, right? He was tangibly touching it, sitting at dinner. And then his other time he was in the clubhouse of the Mets, right? Those are his two social environments until he goes to Brewster, which in itself, by the way, is a $37,000 a year school. So what's your thought on this whole upbringing of Donovan and the impact this has had and how it's created him?
Man, I definitely think it's made him well-rounded. It's made him be able to adapt in different settings. And I think, you know, the Mets thing as well with his father, Donovan Mitchell Sr., who's a phenomenal guy. You know, he's not in the media as much as his mom, but, man, his dad is a phenomenal guy, man. And I think they prepare him, you know, they raised him to be a real well-rounded young man, a grounded young man. And you can see it, man. I definitely think that's influenced and made the person that he is. And prepared him to be a professional as well. Because like his dad told me before, you know, he was able to see a routine develop through, you know, top MLB players and see behind the scenes works and understand interviewing and understand media. If I'm not mistaken, he went to school for media. So, you know, definitely, you know, it prepared him and he understands both sides of the game. He understands the business side. He understands interacting with people from being in different settings and not having the most money and being the guy, you know, who was looking up to something and having a mom and a sister, you know, like that as well. So, yeah, definitely made him a well-rounded person.
When people ask you about Donovan, do you have an anecdote you share, a story you tell?
Man, it's been so many, man. Everybody, like really an All-Star weekend, everybody was asking so many questions about him. And I went to the National Association of Black Journalists convention this year. It was in Detroit. And everybody's just asking how it is to cover him. And I don't know, man. It's just been – I had to sit down and think about it. It's been so many, like like I say, just the smoothie stuff and just, like, the rookie – you know, him breaking out the rookie sweatshirt and us seeing that for the first time. And it's been so many, man. I have to really sit down and think because I could probably write a book about this guy right now, even from just one season. And then coming in my first season, actually being his first season too, I think that was kind of unique, you know, for us both to kind of share that experience together.
So he's Donovan Mitchell at this point. Like, we need to stop, like, trying to figure out who he is as a player. He's good enough. He's Donovan Mitchell. But with
okay, hold on. I got one for you, Dave. I forgot. I would probably say when he had the autograph signing at the Stan store. I don't know if you guys remember that.
I didn't go. I didn't go.
That was phenomenal, man. It's probably about 2,000 people lined up to see him, and he was probably expecting about 200 or 300. That was phenomenal to see his reaction. His mom and his sister was there, and they was just like, I had went out and peeked and showed him, like, the line. He was just, like, so shocked to see how many people. Like, he was just – we just saw him reacting to, you know, how people reacted to him, which was kind of fun and unique, too, because, like, he was a kid with it.
So I shouldn't share this because it'll come back to bite me at some point. So I have a 16-year-old and a 13-year-old, right? So I have an older brother and my 16-year-old's a son and my 13-year-old's a daughter. And I have told Donovan, like, that's enough, dude. Like, I can't watch you with Jordan anymore. Like I'm a crier, and I see that, and every time I see it, I think about my son. Like, stop, dude. Like, I can't handle it. Like, it's got it. Like, I mean, I don't remember what one of the games where he, like, has this unbelievable, amazing game, and the first thing he's doing is walking around the floor trying to find Jordan. And I'm like, and I don't know if you remember, we were in the New York Athletic Club, which is cool in itself, right? Because of the Heisman. And I asked him if there was anyone that he was going to look up in the crowd at Madison Square Garden other than mom or dad and kind of look up to them and say, hey, we did it. And he was like, no. And this was before I really understood the relationship they have. And he was like, no. He was so bummed. He's like, Jordan's not going to be here tonight, my sister. She'll be here in Brooklyn. She got her first soccer playoff game. I tried to figure out if I could go, and I was looking at it. It's like a four-hour drive up there, so I don't think I can get back in time. And I'm like, oh, my God, this guy was, like, seriously concerned.
Yeah, that was crazy, man. His dad had a nice suite in there, and his mom, you know, his family, man. I know that was a fun experience for him, you know, to go back to New York. Madison Square.
And he was tired after that? Woo, was he tired after that? Go back and look at some of his box score lines after that. I think that's what's going to be interesting, Eric, this year, is every time he failed last year, which he did a lot, we've kind of forgotten, it was okay because he was a rookie, right? Like, oh, it's okay, he's a rookie. I wonder what happens this year when he goes 3-for-14. How does he, not the fan base, but moreover, and I'm sure they'll freak a little bit, but how does he react to going 3-for-14 this year?
Yeah, he's so hard on himself, man. That was one of the things last year, you know, him being so hard on himself. But I think as the year went on, he developed more so becoming a pro. I mean, he wasn't as surprised by, you know, his success as he was, say, earlier in the year, which showed growth. And I think now, man, he kind of like he really like a leader of the new school in the NBA. So it's like, he's no longer like starstruck by seeing a LeBron or seeing a D Wade. I mean, you see all the things he's been doing this summer. So I think you will see a lot more composed Donovan this year, you know, no matter what's going on. I think he's got a lot of advice from so many pros and so many veterans around the league that I think he'll understand that every night is not going to be his, and I think he's going to be so much more of a pro this year. Not saying he wasn't a pro last year, but I think he won't be as emotionally attached to doing good or doing bad. He just understands it's a part of the process.
The one that, from a basketball standpoint, is the off-the-bounce three hit at about 27, 28, 29%, depending what part of the season, 29 for the season, 27 near the end. He starts hitting the off-the-bounce three, it's over, right?
Yeah, I saw him working on that. He was on social media with Chris Brickley and you know, the trainer out of New York, Trace Carmelo, and all those guys. And that was part of his routine. So I think he's probably watched a lot of, you know, he's already went on record to say he's watched every game, you know, multiple times throughout the season. So I think he's probably identified his weaknesses, and I think he's not riding off the success of last year. I know that for a fact. You know, that guy is in the gym busting his butt. To make the rookie season laughable. He's going to come back a lot better this year, I feel like.
If he hits the off-the-bounce three, how many points do you think he scores a game?
Man, I think he can jump a good 23 points. I'd give him about 20. He averaged, what, 19 and a half last year? I'd say he'd get up to about 23 points.
Didn't he go 20 and a half by the end? I think he's at
20 and a half.
I think he was at 20.5 by the end.
20 and a half? Okay, yeah, I was off point. So, yeah, I'd say he jumps up about 23 points a game.
I think he score. I don't know if it'll happen. I legitimately think he could score 30 a game in this league.
I think at some point, you know, he can get to that point. But this year, realistically, I would say he'll probably get to about 23. But I think at some point, it's fair to say he could be a 30-point scorer. I mean, he's in the mold of that Dwayne Wade, you know, Damian Lillard type game. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's who I compare him to, like a hybrid of those two. You know, so, yeah, I mean, it's not. It's interesting. I don't think it's going to happen this year, but, yeah, I think it will happen at some point.
I go Iverson.
You see Iverson? I don't know, man. I mean, by the way, like, the volume shooting, I see that, but, like, just as far as, like, the flash, I don't know, because Iverson they kind of got two different games. You know, Iverson was more, like, off the dribble, crossover. You know, Donovan got hops, and, I mean, he shoot a lot more threes than Iverson, too, so. I mean, as far as the volume shooting and being the top guy, I see that comparison. But, like, as far as, like, actual game, I don't see it. But I see how it can be a comparison.
Yeah, I mean, I see it just kind of combo 1-2, not really one or the other, just a bona fide scorer.
Yeah.
Ability to just beat guys, stunningly strong for their size. Mm-hmm. I'm old enough, I covered Iverson. The craziest thing about Iverson, he had the smallest ankles of anyone I've ever seen in my entire life. No, I mean, I'm dead serious. Yeah. Like, I walked in and interviewed him, and I looked out. I was like, how does this guy not broken?
Man, Iverson was like, man, we idolized Iverson growing up, man, especially when he came out with the first shoes, the questions, the Reeboks, man. It was just like, that was the first person we could really, like, identify with, like, how we played, you know, playing around basketball and bringing that to the NBA. So I always hold a level of respect and admiration for that guy, man, because he changed the game.
That's who Derek Favors used to be when he was a kid in the streets of Atlanta. Derek Favors used to go get a milk cart. He used to get a milk crate, and they'd put it on the curb or a garbage can. But milk crate usually, and they'd play, and they obviously have to dunk everything because it was just a little milk crate. And he always wanted to be Iverson. So, you know, that tells you Derek was a big boy. He's Eric Woodyard. We'll come back tomorrow with more. We'll talk about whether he sees any Piston bad boy comparison. We'll talk a little bit about the league with him. Nice enough of him to take the time with us here. Deseret News beat writer, make sure you read him. He's free, by the way. Oh, sorry, cheap shot. Sorry. Sorry, Andy. Sorry, Tony. Eric Woodyard with us at the Deseret News on Locked On Jazz. Special thanks to Eric. We'll do the live show for you on Friday this week if all works together. Part two with Eric tomorrow on the program, so you'll get 3 days in a row of content. At least that's the plan as of right now. I'll be out of town Friday, but we'll try to bust that out for you on Friday with a little live show. We'll have fun to interact. Thanks for joining the Facebook Locked On Jazz Facebook group and all the great content that's been posted there. I'll update it for you today as well if you haven't already been there. This is Locked On Jazz. Feel free to send Eric a thank you for joining the program. We certainly appreciate his time.